Uh-oh. We got a house. Boom, there it is. We have a house. It closed at 5 o'clock on Friday, and so we started to put a few things into it. We're still not living in it. We have to live in a camper for a little bit longer, but we're excited to have the house and to be in it, and it's a great house, a big living room, a big dining room. We want to have a lot of people over. We're excited to have that. And as I was thinking about houses, I thought how exciting it is to have a new house or a new place, a new apartment, whatever it might be, how exciting it is. You get to go into it and think about, I'm going to put this here, and I'm going to put this here, and we're going to have the people here, and this and that, and where we're going to set all this stuff, and it's so exciting. And then you start moving it in. And you're like, I have so much stuff. Where am I going to put it all? How is it all going to fit? And then, unless you are by yourself, you have conflict. She wants a really nice picture right where you want the big screen TV. You really want a shop. She really wants a new kitchen. What about paint colors? What about carpet colors? Do we have carpet or do we have wood floors? What are we going to do? There's conflict that happens in there. And then you think about with parents and kids. I know that my mom used to wonder whether it was a room or a junkyard. And so you have conflict. And when it comes to roommates, you know, and when you have roommates, there's going to be who washes the dishes? When do you wash the dishes? There's always conflict when we think about, when we think about these things. And so whatever the scenario is, there's always this idea of we all have differences of opinion. Everyone has differences of opinion. And so how do we live together in harmony? And usually this happens within conflict, and we have conflict going on, and we ask the question of, how can I possibly live with these people in harmony? And how do we do that? Because no one likes a stressful household. No one likes a stressful church either. And so Paul is trying in the book of Philippians, we've been studying through the book of Philippians, and he's been trying to work with this church to come together and to be united together. And it's interesting because as you read through a lot of Paul's letters, he's really trying to help them be united. Most of them, they're having conflict, and he's having to talk to them about the conflict that's going on. Because there's always going to be conflict. And so last week, I forgot to put this in here. How do we live together in harmony? Bananas and carrots, they work really good together in smoothies. But how does meat go with vegetables? Some people say, I like the meat, but not the salad. Salad's only good when you add bacon. Yeah, that's how you live in harmony with a salad. Add bacon. All right. So last week in Philippians chapter 2, we engaged with Paul talking about and centering on Jesus. So Philippians chapter 2, if you turn there, verse 5. Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus. So notice the first thing that he's going to say, have this mind that Jesus had. We need to have the same mindset, that Jesus has. And he continues in verse 6. Who though he was in the form of God, did not consider equality with God a thing to be grasped. But Jesus emptied himself by taking on the form of a servant or a slave. Being born in the likeness of men and being found in human form, he humbled himself by becoming obedient. Obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. Therefore, God has exalted him and bestowed on him the name that is above every name, so that the name of Jesus every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. So we remember what Jesus did. Jesus had the perfect life. He's up with God, he's with God, in the presence of God, and he's asked to come down and be a human, to be like one of us, to live like one of us, to live among us. All of our craziness, all of the things that are going on, to live in harmony among us, to show what it is like to be in harmony. And Jesus humbles himself. He humbles himself for our sake. Not for his own sake, but for our sake. And so we're thinking of this, and the power of this is ringing in our ears as we're reading through Philippians. And then he's going to go on with verse 12. Therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, so now, not only as in my presence, but much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. A great memory verse, Philippians 2:12. Work out your salvation with fear and trembling. But what does that mean? I remember memorizing it as a kid, but what does it mean? Well, the first thing that comes to mind is don't be arrogant about your faith. I remember talking to our college students, every time a college student or a young person would come up and they would ask a question, they're like, I'm sorry I have this question, but, and then they would ask the question. And I would tell them, it's not about the question or that you're dumb or anything like that, but the reality of it is that if we knew everything, we would be God. And we wouldn't need God. And the reality of it is that we don't know everything. And so throughout our life, we're going to continue to grow. We're going to continue to learn. So we need to have the heart of a learner, the heart of somebody who's constantly learning and constantly growing. We need to have the heart that is like Jesus, that is humble. We need to be willing to be humble. And so I think of that in terms of what Jesus did. So Jesus humbles himself to the point of death. Serving and death. So what if we were to humble ourselves? And the phrase that Paul uses here is fear and trembling. So when you hear of this fear and trembling, this is the response of every single person who comes into the presence of God in the Old Testament. So you think of the cloud coming down on Mount Sinai, and there is fear and trembling that happens, and the Israelites do not want to go into the presence of God. They're afraid. You think of when the angel of the Lord shows up. Every time he shows up, there is fear and trembling. And that's how people would respond. It's like, God, you are so awesome. You're so amazing. And your goodness just drives me to my knees. It drives me to how Doug said today, how little we feel and how big and great you are. And so we have this idea of humility and responding to God in fear and trembling. The other thing is when we read this verse, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. Who is the your in this? Is it us or me? Well, actually, it's plural in this. The idea is us as the church. So it's not just me, myself, and I work out my own salvation, because that's the way we take it. Work out just my salvation, just me. Well, that's not actually biblical. It's not the Lone Ranger faith. When he's talking about work out your salvation, we need to work out our salvation as the Prineville Church of Christ, together as a unified body. That's what he's talking about here. He wants us to be united together. So we're expected to think about this, work out our salvation with fear and trembling. So guess what? It's not about me as the minister. It's not about James as a retired minister. He actually didn't even come in this week. He's going, yes. It's not about Alan as a past minister. It's not about our elders, but it's about us working together and being united together. That's what it's supposed to be about. And so it continues in verse 13. So think of this. Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who works in you. For it is God who works in you, both to will and to work for his good pleasure. It's not my good pleasure, but it's God's good pleasure. That's the context. So first, the first thing we got to do is consider Jesus. So the first part was consider Jesus, what Jesus did, how Jesus lived, humbling himself to become a servant. That leads to our response of fear and trembling as a community, that we don't know everything, that we're working together, we're trusting that God is working in us, and then we know that God is at work, so we must seek Him in prayer together. We must be praying for each other. We must be praying together so that we can fulfill His good purpose. Not mine, not yours, but ours, as God reveals it to us. God's good purpose. So think about this. What's God's good purpose? What is it? What does God want? Does God want me to have a big screen TV? In my context, no, He doesn't. But does He, you know, what does God want? God wants everyone to come to Him. He wants every single person to have salvation, to know His love, for every single person to be saved, so that at the end, everyone is with Him. That's God's burning desire. If you read the story all the way through, God's desire, the moment Adam and Eve are kicked out of the Garden of Eden, God does two things. Number one, He gives them clothes. He clothes them and He begins this pursuit of bringing them back to Himself. That's exactly what Jesus is. Jesus comes down to bring us back to God. That's His purpose. That's what He wants. He wants everyone to know Him. Everyone to know, like we looked at this morning in Romans, everyone to have life and have peace, and not a life that pursues death. So Paul continues in this. So we're living in God's good purpose. We're seeking God's purpose. So now, verse 14. Do all things without grumbling or arguing or disputing, that you may be blameless and pure, children of God without blemish, in the midst of a crooked and twisted generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. I guess I actually put this on here. Or shine as stars in the sky. Can we grumble and argue as Christians? All right. This morning we were talking about deeds of the flesh and deeds of the spirit. Or setting our mind on the spirit versus setting our mind on the flesh. As a disciple of Jesus, as a follower of Jesus, can we or should we grumble and argue? Not if we're seeking God's good purpose. It should never happen. We should be united. And if we're not united, what's the first thing we should do? Pray. Pray. With our college students, we were having conflict, and so I had to actually create a conflict resolution worksheet for them. You know what was the first thing on there? Pray. You know what the second thing on there was? Pray. Third thing on there? Pray. And I was like, come on, you got to know first, pray. Because as you pray and as you seek this, because it's like, oh, I'm really struggling with this, and I start praying about it, and all of a sudden, the Spirit is going to say, yeah, guess what? Here's your part in this. Ooh, I don't want to hear that. I just want to know what they did, not what I did, because that means I have to change. And so that was the first thing. You need to pray. And so after that, I said, pray three times. Then I said, now consider your part in this. And what you bring to the table in a negative way and how you caused it. I learned that especially, we can learn that in our marriage. I learned that in my marriage of saying to my wife, when we're having conflict, I'm like, okay, what did I say that caused this? Even if I said it the right thing, I said it the wrong way. And I go, you know, if I would have said it this way, it probably would have sounded better. And she's like, yeah, it would have. Okay. I'm learning this. Can we grumble and argue and become blameless and pure? Ooh. So do everything without grumbling and arguing, so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God, without fault in a warped and crooked generation. That's what we want to be. We want to be pure and blameless. We want to, on this next one, we want to shine like the stars. I love being here versus down in the valley because I can actually see the Milky Way now. And I love seeing the stars and the shining of the stars. Can we grumble and argue and shine like stars? No. It reminded me, as I was going through this, I was thinking about some of our college students. There was early on, there was a college student and his wife that they had a roommate. And one Saturday night, they're sitting around watching movies or TV or whatever with their roommate, and they start complaining. They're like, "Oh, I don't want to get up tomorrow. It's going to be so early, and I don't really want to do it because so-and-so's going to be teaching the class, and so-and-so's leading the worship, and oh, it's just not going to be that good." And they were sitting there complaining about it, and "I really wish I could stay up and finish watching this movie." And they were complaining and grumbling. And then they stopped doing that. They finished the movie, and they got up, and this guy, it was funny because he asked his roommate, he said, "You want to go to church with me tomorrow?" And the guy looked at him, and he's like, "You just told me you don't want to go. You told me you didn't want to be there. You didn't want to hear this. You didn't want this and this." And he rattled it all back to him. He's like, "No, bro, I'm good." And the guy came into my office. The reason I know this, he came into my office, and he was like, "Dude, I was so convicted by what I was saying, because I was grumbling and arguing around people." He didn't even realize it. He was thinking, you know, just him and his wife arguing, grumbling, and there's people there watching. There's kids there watching their parents. There's people there that are watching and noticing these things. So can we shine like stars and grumble and argue? No, we can't. So consider your attitude as an individual towards the church or towards the other people that are in our church. We talked this morning in class about adoption and how we're all adopted. We're all part of the family. We talked a few weeks ago how we don't get to choose the people that are in our family, but we love them anyway, and we want to love them anyway. So the question is, are we united? Do we love each other and talk kindly about each other? Are we loving and kind, or are we arguing and grumbling? So let's talk about what the positive would be. What would it look like if I wasn't arguing and grumbling? Because, you know, if you do it all the time, then it comes a habit. So let me go this way. I love how we serve together on Wednesday night with the clothes. We came, we set up these boxes, and we sorted a ton of clothes together. And I love how we do that, and we work together, and we serve together. I love how we work together to help our kids grow through LTC, and how we're raising up the next generation. You guys are going to be the leaders in the church. You're going to be elders. You're going to be deacons, ministry leaders. Is that a scary thought? Or are you excited about it? We're going to raise you up as leaders. I love how we're doing that. And I think of how I approach God in fear and trembling, asking, what is God's good purpose for us? Where is He leading us? What's it going to do? What do you want us to do, God? And asking, what is the message each week? How will we reach our community with the gospel? How will we shine like stars in the heavens? And there's things that happen. There's things that people do that are really good. And so I want to invite you to join me, to think of this image of a family that is joined together and united around the cross of Jesus and focused in on the cross of Jesus, a family that talks about the future of what God is doing, the now of what God could be doing and where God is leading. And I pray that we become a church where grumbling and arguing go away. It would be amazing if there was a church that did that, and I want it to be ours. We could be an example. We could be the stars shining as we do that, to grow to be pure and blameless children of God that shine the love of God in Crook County. Wouldn't that be awesome? And as we continue to grow in this, here's what's going to happen. People are going to know, they're going to see. They're going to see the peace of God. They're going to see the love of God that is in us and in the words that we speak, not just about the church and the church family, but in all of our lives about everything that we do, to have kind and encouraging words. And if that's what we are and that becomes who we are, people are going to be drawn into this. And as people are drawn in, guess what's going to happen? More complaining and arguing. And we'll have to train them too. It's going to be good, and we train them and we encourage them. So when we hear the grumbling and we hear the arguing, to walk alongside, to listen. What is the source of what they're saying? Where are you missing in your walk with God so that we can join in this together? And so we'll listen to each other. We'll encourage each other. And we'll work towards building the kingdom as a unified body. And it's going to be a good thing. It's going to be an amazing thing. And so as I was thinking about this, it was interesting because I wrote this, and then just this week I was convicted by the words, because I was complaining to my kids about my kids. And I was complaining to them and upset because they weren't, whatever, cleaning enough or doing whatever. And I was convicted by this because I'm like, wow, I saw their faces and I'm like, I shouldn't be doing this. I need to change and be encouraging. And so I tried to be encouraging and to continue to be encouraging. And I think of, you know, he's sitting right back there listening. And my wife is listening. So when it happens again, it's going to be like, Dad, you got to be encouraging. You can't complain. Good. I love that. Because I want to be transformed. I want to be somebody who continues to learn and continues to grow. And so here's what I want everybody to do. I want everybody to stand up. And so if you are somebody who is like me that's convicted by this, that I'm a complainer, I'm an arguer, and this has been who I am, and you're convicted by that, then in a moment you can come forward and we'll pray for you. And you'll be forgiven. Now, if you're someone who is, I think of part of the thing when I think of being someone who argues and complains, it's usually because they want to be in control of everything. So if you're someone who wants to be in control of everything, and you're convicted by that, you can come forward and we can pray together and you can be forgiven. And the other thing is, for the rest of us, we're going to sing together. And as we sing, I want this to be a song of unity, that we are unifying around the cross of Jesus, that we are unifying together to encourage one another, to not complain, to not argue, but to be unified as a body. And when we find ourselves doing that, not to say, hey, you can't argue and you can't complain, but to walk alongside and to hug and to listen and to encourage each other towards the cross of Jesus. Let's be a church that does that. And I think we will be. I'm excited for it. So let's sing.